Welcome to the PITC UK podcast with your host, Daryl Ann Ferns, and her partner in true crime, Tom Ferns. The latest episode of the PITC UK podcast has some topics that some people may find distressing or upsetting. Hello everyone and welcome to episode 4 of the PITC UK podcast. So Daryl, what case are we going to be talking about today?
Today we're going to be talking about the mysterious death of Lauren Agee.
Okay, so what makes it mysterious?
So it's an accidental death that was ruled accidental by the police.
Okay.
But it's under mysterious circumstances.
Right.
So family believe that there's more to it. And then it could be possible foul play.
Right, okay.
So we're going to sort of go through everything and try to determine, you know, what we think happened.
Our own theory.
Yeah.
Okay, that sounds interesting.
Using all the information that I managed to gather. Before we get into it, I got most of my information from the Without Warning podcast, which is produced and hosted by Sheila Wysocki, who is the PI for the family.
Right, okay.
So there's a lot of first-hand information that I've gathered.
Yeah, where they're being close to the case.
Yeah, from the podcast, but also, you know, a lot of it is quite biased.
Which is understandable, yeah.
In order to sort of, like, fit what they're trying to...
The answers they're trying to get.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I've tried my best to sort of split it, go down the middle.
Well, that's what we're here for, isn't it? To give our own theories on stuff.
Yeah, it is. It was quite a difficult case to research, just because it's so deep.
Yeah.
There's so many layers. But I've tried my best to just sort of put it all together and hope that it makes sense.
Well, yeah, hope it makes sense for me anyway.
Lauren Taylor Agee was born on the 19th of August, 1993, in Biloxi, Mississippi, to parents Brian and Sherry. At the time of her death, she was living with her mother and stepfather, Michael Smith, in Hendersonville, Tennessee, along with her three siblings, Allison, Jordan, and Joshua.
Okay.
In her obituary, Lauren was described as having an infectious energy and a sweet spirit. She was bubbly and quick-witted, with a huge heart and an enchanting smile. Lauren was exceptionally beautiful and loved making people laugh, but she was also known as someone that you could always count on to have your back if needed. Lauren was outgoing and popular. She had a lot of friends and a boyfriend and was an incredibly gifted dancer. She received a dance scholarship to Bethel University, but later left to study criminal justice at Ball State University in Gallatin, Tennessee, after telling her mother she wanted to solve mysteries.
Which is very ironic.
Very ironic, yeah, and quite sad.
Well, yeah.
Really, to think of how she died.
Well, yeah, she's turned into her own mystery.
Yeah. In July 2015, Lauren was invited by her high school friend Samantha Arnold to attend Wakefest, a wakeboarding and water sports festival that was taking place at Center Hill Lake in Smithville, Tennessee, from Friday the 24th of July through to Sunday the 26th. Lauren wanted to go, but was later told by Samantha that her car was full, so she made plans to travel with her longtime friend of 11 years, Hannah Palmer, instead. When Lauren informed her mum of their plans, Sherry wasn't keen. She knew that Wakefest had a reputation for hardcore drinking and wild partying, plus she didn't believe that Hannah was a reliable friend, having described her as someone who would come in and out of Lauren's life when it suited her. However, Lauren was 21 and didn't need her parents' permission, but she reassured Sherry that she'd be meeting up with a group of friends and she'd be back by Saturday evening because she had plans to attend a party with her boyfriend Chase.
Okay.
So there are a lot of characters.
Yeah, there seems to be. Yeah, a lot of people already, yeah.
And it only gets worse.
Right, okay. I'll try and keep track of everything, yeah.
Yeah, it can get quite confusing.
Okay.
It took me a while to click on to who everybody was. But I'll try and describe everybody as I go along as best I can.
Okay, that's fine, yeah.
On Friday, July 24th, Lauren excitedly packed her sleeping bag and clothes and left for Wakefest with Hannah. The duo drove down together, posting photos on social media along the way. When Lauren and Hannah arrived at Centre Hill Lake, the girls noticed that Hannah's boyfriend, Aaron Lilly, and his friend, Christopher Stout, had already set up camp. The group are camping atop a steep cliffside with a 90-foot drop on one side and a 45-foot drop on the other. In order to get to the campground, they'd have to take a canoe from the marina and paddle across the lake. Once there, they'd then have to climb the cliff using a rope to haul themselves up, navigating their way through the rough terrain and dodging obstacles such as trees, brush and rocks. So it's unclear whether Lauren had prior knowledge of the group's risky camping arrangements. So Sherry and a handful of Lauren's friends stated that she told them she'd be staying in a cabin, but no one except Lauren really knows the truth, and it's speculated that she probably lied to her parents to prevent them from worrying about her.
Well, it's just a mission just to go get in a tent.
Yeah.
Climb up the side of a
clearly
cliff.
Very dangerous.
Oh yeah, 100%.
So if you tell your mum, you know, I'm going to Wakefest, which mum knows is
a party place, and then say I'm staying on a cliff. Yeah.
I'm staying on a 90-foot cliff. She's going to say no.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
And she's just going to make it harder for you to go. So, yeah, I do get that she, you know, people believe that she probably lied. But do we don't know
we don't
for
know.
Sure.
Yeah, of course.
That's the thing. Like, yeah. she might have
been innocent,
in, you know, that she would be staying in a cabin.
Yeah, of course.
So that night, Lauren, Hannah, Chris and Aaron made their way to a bar on the marina called Fish Lips. While there, Lauren met up with some of her friends, including Samantha Arnold, who was the girl who initially invited her to Wakefest.
Okay.
And Samantha's best friend, Cassie Franks. Cassie Franks had a lengthy history with Aaron Lilly, and they dated on and off for around 3 years previously. According to the Without Warning podcast, Cassie and Aaron officially ended things at the beginning of that year, but were still secretly dating. They were secretly dating around this time.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah.
It wasn't until Aaron arrived at Fish Lips with his new girlfriend, Hannah, that Cassie realised he wasn't dating her exclusively, and understandably, she became upset. According to Samantha, after a few drinks, Kathy confronted Hannah and they got into a heated argument over Aaron, which ultimately resulted in a physical fight. After the altercation, Cassie left Wakefest in her car, taking Samantha's belongings with her, leaving her with nowhere to stay. Lauren, being the kind and caring person she was, told Samantha that she could stay with her up on the cliff. And after the two of them had a few more drinks together, they headed back to the campsite, which they are recorded actually in a video saying or describing the cliff as a death trap.
Right, okay. It would be, instantly.
And but it's just, that's just so horrible to think that, like, they called
it a death trap and it actually caused, well, we don't know yet, but...
You don't know.
I don't know yet, but yeah.
I'm assuming that you think that it's going to be going in that direction.
Well, yeah. Again, I don't want to sort of preempt anything yet because I've only heard, you know, a few minutes of the story. So, you know, but I'm going to sort of play it by ear because the last couple have been way off. So I want to...
I mean, like, you know, girl going to a festival, drinking, staying on a cliff.
Yeah.
You know, it yeah. speaks for itself,
yeah.
really.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, I'm going to wait and see, you know, how these other people interact with Lauren and how, you know, that changes the narrative of the story, because I'm sure it will.
Well, I'm not just, you know, telling you a story about
a girl falling off a cliff, yeah.
Well, it could be.
Yeah, that's true, yeah, that's true.
The next night, Lauren, Hannah and Aaron spent another evening at Fish Lips. It's reported by everyone who saw Lauren, including off-duty cop and Wakefest security officer Chris Yarchuk, that she appeared to be in a great mood. However, a friend of Lauren's called Jade reported that she'd text her around 10 p.m. asking if she could come and pick her up because she wasn't having a good time. It was also around this time that Lauren began asking others whether she could stay with them instead of camping on the cliff, including her friend Evan at Chelton's. Evan explained to Lauren that he was staying in an RV with Lauren's ex-boyfriend Clint and Clint's new girlfriend Callie, so it'd be pretty awkward, and Lauren agreed, stating it was no big deal. On the Without Warning podcast, Erin said that Lauren had a few beers that night but wasn't impaired and definitely wasn't publicly intoxicated.
Right, so she didn't seem very keen about going back up to that cliff top that night then.
It doesn't sound like it. No. She really was trying to...
Stay anywhere other than there, really.
Yeah, she was... Yeah. I mean, she seemed quite desperate to the point where she was asking like friends to come and pick her up from the festival.
Yeah.
And she was supposed to be going home that Saturday night anyway.
Of course, according to her mum.
So, maybe, you know, she was struggling to get a lift home.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe Hannah didn't want to go home and, you know, they drove together, so...
Yeah, makes sense.
It does make sense. On Sunday the 26th of July, at around 4 p.m, fisherman Lynn Blair and his son Dylan were out in their boat on the lake when they coasted towards a cove. They came across what looked like a pair of hot pink shorts in the water, but upon closer inspection, the fisherman realised that it was in fact the deceased body of a young girl floating face down. In complete shock of what they discovered, they wasted no time informing Harry and Dina Elder, who were employers of the marina, and they in turn informed Chris Yarchuk and another off-duty police officer, Ryan Mullinson. The two men headed towards the cove, and upon arrival, they encountered two men paddling a canoe behind them. No one but the Blairs, the elders, and the two cops knew about the body as they hadn't announced it publicly, so they thought it was strange that other people were out there, especially when they realised that the men in the canoe were Aaron, Lily and Chris Stout. They told the men to stay away, but Lily kept asking whether it was their friend. Yarchuk and Mullinson reported that this was immediately a red flag to them because Lily and his friends hadn't told anyone that they thought Lauren was missing.
So this is the two boys that she'd met at the festival with so it was a friend's boyfriend and...
It's Aaron, Lily, who is Hannah's boyfriend, and Chris Stout, who is boyfriend's friend.
Okay. Makes sense.
So they were at the scene around the same time that the off-duty police officers were finding the body.
Right, okay.
Of Lauren.
Okay. That's not suspicious, though, because they could have just genuinely just been out there in the canoe.
Yeah, do you know, that's what I was thinking.
Because if the body's not, you know...
I was researching it. That was my thoughts, that, like, I didn't really think that was suspicious.
It's not, because, again, if, you know, they're on a lake or marina anyway for this festival, it doesn't seem suspicious to me.
I think what the officers were trying to say was that, you know, Lauren wasn't seen after Saturday night, Sunday morning early.
Mm-hmm.
This is 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Okay.
So, for them to be there at that time...
Yeah.
After all the time for them to specifically to be there, they found that strange because they hadn't reported their friend as missing or told anybody.
I suppose as well, if they had something to do with it and a body was floating around that area, you see a lot of people congregating towards a particular area. There's that old saying of, you know, they always return to this scene of the crime.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I suppose, yeah, that
And
that
as we
could,
get into
yeah.
it more... You know, when we go through, like, theories, we might figure out why they might have been in that area at that time.
Okay, yeah, that's fine.
But for now, I'm saving that.
Yeah, that's how it is for now, that's fine.
So, once police recovered the body, the coroner conducted an autopsy and determined that the cause of death was blunt force trauma and possible accidental drowning. The manner of death was ruled as undetermined, and police... didn't suspect foul play at all, so they closed the case, stating that she likely fell from the cliff to her death.
And I suppose that the blunt force trauma could have been from her falling, hitting a rock or hitting something.
So yeah. Lauren's body was found with trauma to the back of her head and back, and she had bruising along her shoulders and thighs. Her larynx also appeared to have been crushed. So pathologists noticed that scratches and hematomas found in her body were likely caused from hitting rocks, trees and other debris as she fell, and that the blow to her head was from the impact of hitting the water.
Okay, but why the crushed larynx? Like, that doesn't make any sense.
So,
because that's usually strangulation, isn't it?
They believed that Lauren had fallen throat first into some rocks, causing
and then
the damaged larynx, and it wasn't enough to kill her. So that wasn't it. The larynx wasn't a cause of death.
Okay. But even still, it could have been partial strangulation and then thrown, you know, she could have been knocked unconscious and then thrown in the water. And also as well, like, I know this sounds really, really silly. So if she's hit a branch throat first, that means she's hitting stuff, which means that the force in which she was falling would have been slowed.
So that it wouldn't have damaged...
It wouldn't have damaged to the back. Head. Yeah.
Unless, you know, because this cliff, there were hidden rocks in the water.
Okay.
So if she could have hit her head on a rock, but
underwater, I suppose,
the trauma to the back of her head was probably from the impact of hitting the water.
Yeah, that doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
But I have heard that, like, if you fall from a high drop into water, that it's like hitting concrete.
Yeah, I can understand that. But again, it still doesn't justify, if she's hit things on the way down, her body would have slowed. Mm-hmm. So,
unless it was just a clean drop right in. Is that what you're saying?
Like, I could understand if she literally fell from the cliff and hit the water, then yeah, she could have had some serious, serious damage to the back of her head if she fell backwards. My only sort of thinking along the lines are that if she's hitting things on the way down, a branch, a rock, whatever it might be, and then hitting the water, the speed in which she would hit the water, the damage would be less.
Yeah.
So, but again, I don't know how fast she would have to fall to, you know, so again, that's just a theory.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you there as well. Yeah. Her nose and fingers were also broken, which investigators believed fit into their theory of a fall.
Well, it fits into the fall, but how can you hit the back of your head, the back of
your
back,
fingers,
and all of that
your
stuff?
Your legs, because she had bruises on her legs. Like,
yeah, it seems like a lot.
It does seem like a lot. You know,
unless she's hit multiple things and sort of bounced off and rolled and hit other things.
To sort of paint a picture of the cliff. Mm-hmm. So on the 90-foot drop, as far as I'm aware, that's like a clean drop.
Okay.
So, like, just completely straight.
Yeah.
Whereas on the other side, the 45-foot drop, there's, like, cliff sides on the cliff. So if you fell, you might fall onto another cliff.
Okay.
Just, like, a smaller cliff. Just,
I completely understand what you're going on about, yeah.
And
sort of ridges.
Yeah,
on the way
just
down.
like, you know, where cliff has probably, like, chipped off.
Yeah, that's fine.
Over the years, whatever. So I've fallen in my past.
I
fell off a three-story apartment building.
Yeah.
And
it was a clean drop.
It was a complete clean drop. My injuries were quite severe.
Yeah.
For my drop. So obviously it wasn't anywhere near this big, and it wasn't into water, but I broke bones.
Yeah.
Like, feet, wrists, pelvis. My face was fucked.
Yeah.
Like, complete scratches absolutely everywhere.
Yeah.
I didn't hit anything on the way down.
But you still had all them scratches.
But I still had scratches.
You must
but
have.
But they were more, like, my scratches were, like small. They weren't large. They were, like, a lot of small.
That's probably burst blood vessels, I suppose.
Maybe.
You know.
Yeah.
But yeah.
At the same time, you know, with my fall, I would expect Lauren probably to have more injuries,
damage.
Do you not think?
Yeah.
But maybe not more, but different.
Yeah.
Injuries.
The only thing I can think is that if she's fell, she's gone in head first, and her body, as she's hit the water, has hit.
Hmm.
So she sort of hit things on
the
way down.
Do you not break your neck doing that, though? Like,
unless she's gone in like this. No, because then the nose wouldn't make
any
sense. But again, it's tough to theorise.
It is, and obviously we're not experts in this, so we don't know the pattern of falling.
No, of course.
The destruction to the body. But toxicology reports showed that no drugs were found in Lauren's system at the time of her death, but her blood alcohol level was twice the legal limit, which is interesting because Evan said that she didn't seem drunk.
Some people can carry alcohol better than others.
And he did say that she usually could take her alcohol quite well.
That's it. You know, and again, it comes down to, it's like, you know, when people say about, oh, drink driving, and some people can have, and I'm not encouraging this by any means, of course not, some people can have 10 pints and be not impaired whatsoever. Some people can have one drink and be over the limit because their body doesn't take it well. Their, you know, it's their height, their weight, their metabolism.
Was,
it's all these different
really,
things.
She was a really, really petite girl as well. Yeah. So I find that quite strange.
But yeah. But again, she may have just been,
just,
again,
it's
at 21.
People just aren't they?
That's
like,
it.
And it can be determined by, like, what you've eaten, how much you've eaten, and that kind of thing. So.
Yeah.
And also, it probably seemed a lot more over the limit than it should have done because she's probably been continually drinking. So maybe it could have, you know, she wasn't completely sober from the night before when she started drinking
That's it.
Along with the trauma to Lauren's body, pathologists noted a distinct triangle imprinted into Lauren's chest, which during the autopsy indicated lividity. So for those unaware like me, I had to Google it. Lividity is defined as the intravascular pooling of blood in gravitationally dependent parts of the body after death. So basically, when someone passes away, blood pools internally to a part of the body which is pressed against a surface.
Okay.
Leaving marks on the skin.
Like a bruise. Yeah,
so I wish I would have got a picture to show you because this, like, triangle is, like, probably the most talked about thing.
Yeah, couldn't it have just been something under the water?
No, because she was floating.
Well, she was floating, wasn't she? Of course.
If I can try and describe the triangle from memory, it's just underneath, like,
a chest,
and it's a bright red, perfect triangle with a smaller triangle inside of it.
Okay. I completely understand what you're saying.
And it's sort of like a bruise, but it's obviously like a pattern. So she's been laid against something that has that pattern, then that's caused it.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
So it could well be that... No, because this is only caused after death.
So it's after death. So it's once, you know, your blood stops pumping around your body, it automatically just all falls to where the gravity is pulling it.
Which makes sense, yeah.
So, like, I don't know.
She's been lent over
You know, like we were saying a couple of weeks ago that, like, when we were talking about the Kendrick Johnson case, and he was head first.
Yeah.
And his...
Yeah, his, but his head his, had
he
ballooned.
Was found
yeah,
head
yeah.
first, and his
yeah, yeah.
head was completely, like, red. And
yeah.
So that's sort of what that is. And
okay, yeah, that
I
makes
think,
sense. So that, for me, indicates that she's been lent over something after death.
Exactly. So, in this case, Lauren's chest had to have been pressing against something shaped like a triangle for a significant period of time after death. Investigators claimed that lividity had set in during the recovery process and concluded that the triangle likely came from Lauren's body being placed on the floor of their boat on top of a triangular hatch. So, they've got a hatch on the boat. I've seen people go into really big, like, great details of this. John Lorden, who I love, like, did a whole thing on this on YouTube, and they, like, photoshopped the picture of the hatch from the recovery boat onto the triangle found on a chest and, like, tried to match it up, and it did match up, but it still wasn't perfect.
Right, okay.
And it's still disputed by Lauren's family.
That's where it's come from.
That's where it's come from. I mean, like, if you think about it, it probably is that, because would it be a coincidence that she's found this triangle and...
But my only sort of counter-argument, and again, that's what I'm here for, if they put the body in the boat, why would they put it face down?
Lauren's body?
Yeah.
The recovery?
Yeah.
Oh, God, I don't know. I didn't look into that.
But again, that would be my question, because thing, you know, if I was in that situation, and, you know, it's an unfortunate situation for that family to be in, you wouldn't take the body out of the water and put it face down in the boat. You'd put her on her back.
Yeah, I don't know what the procedure is or the protocol is for whether there is one, whether it's just, you know.
But again, that's a respect thing. You wouldn't put a body face down. You know, if you didn't like what you saw, you would cover it with coats or blankets or something.
I don't know.
You know.
I think there were videos when they put the body in the boat, but I've not seen them.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether, because that was the first time that they got to inspect the body,
yeah.
that they were checking her for her injuries on her back, because she had a lot on her back and the back of her head, so maybe they were looking at those while they were transporting her back to the mainland. I don't know.
It's tough because, again, you know, it'd have to be for a prolonged period.
Yeah, that's the thing.
And that's the thing for me. So why would that happen?
I'm not actually sure, like, what the time period is.
Yeah.
So I probably should have looked that up. But, I mean, it's confusing enough to me. Like,
yeah.
I love true crime, but I'm not a doctor.
No, of course.
I do
find
it quite, like, tricky to sort of, you know, have these things explained to me in a way that I could understand it. Lauren's parents were informed of her death around 7 p.m. on Sunday evening. Talking to the Without Warning podcast, Sherry said that she'd been worried about her daughter since she didn't return home on the Saturday like she'd planned. She stated that she'd tried to contact Lauren multiple times that day, but she didn't answer, and calls weren't going through to Hannah's phone. In order to rationalise, Sherry told herself that Lauren may have just wanted to stay at Wakefest for an additional day, since the event was going on until Sunday. She also believed that Lauren's friends would have reached out to her or Chase if something was wrong. However, by Sunday, Sherry was panicked. It wasn't like her daughter to not inform her of any change in plans, and her fears were unfortunately realised when the investigator in charge, Jeremy Taylor, arrived at her home, stating that Lauren had got into a terrible cliff-jumping accident and unfortunately didn't make it.
Should he have said that? She's made an assumption there that she's jumped.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't it just be an unfortunate accident?
Exactly. And this, he told her this when the parents were at the hospital.
Right, okay.
So, yeah.
Hmm.
That is jumping to conclusions. And that's sort of like the problem I feel that Sherry has with the police force that investigated this case.
Yeah.
After the discovery of Lauren's body, Yarchuk and Melenson handed the case over to the investigating police department, but not before doing their own little investigations first. The officers didn't have jurisdiction or any authority over Lauren's body, but they suspected things weren't as cut and dry as a tragic accident, so treated it as a crime scene. So back when they were finding the body for the first time,
yeah.
This is the two off-duty police officers.
Yeah.
Ryan escorted Aaron and Chris back to the mainland so that they could give their statements to the actual police department that was taking charge. And while en route, he noticed that the boys seemed nervous but didn't seem surprised by Lauren's death. During their conversation, Ryan noticed that whenever Chris would talk, Aaron would tell him to shut up. And at one point, according to the podcast by Sheila Waisaki, when Ryan asked Chris what he's thinking about, Chris replied, "I'm thinking about how I'm going to get that gun from your hip and get off this boat." Obviously, this can't be proven because there's no evidence that he said that.
Of course, yeah.
But Ryan claimed that Harry Elder, which was the employee from the marina, who was driving the boat at the time, heard him and could back it up if he needed to.
Okay.
So that's a bit shady.
Yeah, very.
Also, at this point as well, Ryan was just trying to make conversation with the boys. Like, wasn't even talking about, like, what had happened.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he asked Chris what he did for a living. And Chris worked in a warehouse that disposed of human limbs from the hospital. So, you know, like if someone gets amputated.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Where do the
probably a very big
body parts go? Like, I've never thought about that in my life.
I imagine it'll go to an incinerator, won't it?
It's his job, or was his job,
right,
to dispose of body parts. And I just thought that was like...
That's creepy in itself, yeah.
Who would go into it? Like, he said that...
Imagine that interview.
He said that, like, even people from his town had no idea what went on in that warehouse. Like, nobody knew what it was. And now, like, every time we drive somewhere, I'm going to be thinking...
That warehouse
what's going on in there?
Chop shop, yeah.
In the official statements provided by the group, Hannah, Chris and Aaron talked to investigators through the events of that weekend. Their accounts are a bit muddy and it can get quite confusing, so I'm going to try my best to simplify each of their versions to try and make sense of what they believe happened.
Okay.
So, the group claimed that on the night of Saturday 25th of July, Harren, Lauren and Aaron were outside of Fish Lips drinking and having a good time, which is backed up by many other people at the bar that night, including Chris Yarchuk. None of them noticed that Lauren was unhappy at this time, despite Jade and Evan's accounts that she was trying to leave or at least find another place to stay. Samantha Arnold also told, without warning, that Lauren got into an altercation with her ex's new girlfriend, Callie. But strangely enough, no one else recalled this happening.
Right.
But many of the friends remembered Lauren repeatedly talking about wanting to go and see her ex-boyfriend, Clint, who was also at Fish Lips.
Right.
At around 2 a.m, the group left the bar and, according to Hannah and Aaron, went to a houseboat on the marina where they found Chris Stout completely inebriated and passed out on the porch. They all agree that they collected Chris and made their way back up to the campsite. Hannah and Aaron stated that once they got back up to the cliff, they went to bed together in a two-man tent. Chris initially recalled Lauren getting into his hammock and taking a selfie of the two of them together. I just want to say, stop there and say that this selfie is available to find on Google.
Okay.
And it's literally just that he's like sort of lying on the hammock, she's sat in the hammock taking the selfie. And it's claimed that this was taken at this time.
But right. It's
light outside. And I'm not talking about 2 a.m. Maybe it's getting lighter. It's like daytime. And he's wearing sunglasses.
So that doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, yeah.
So whether he was just that drunk that he didn't remember, or they're trying to use that as something to say, look, she was here and she was alive at this time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes no sense.
That really sort of like messed with my head a little bit, because I was like, how can that be?
Truthful.
At 2 a.m. in the morning, when it's clearly... And I did think sometimes it's maybe, you know, in the summer, starts getting light at that time. Not light, but, you know...
Well, usually it's not till about 4 a.m. that it starts, you know...
And I don't know what it's like in Tennessee.
Yeah,
whether
of course.
It's different or what, yeah. But... Yeah, that was strange. He then stated he passed out and doesn't remember anything else from that night, except that Hannah slept in his hammock that was suspended over the 90-foot drop of the cliffside.
Okay.
So, yeah, they slept together in a hammock, apparently, which also just makes no sense.
Hmm.
The next day, when Hannah woke, she noticed that Lauren's flip-flops, phone and bag were all still at the campsite, but Lauren wasn't there. Hannah woke Chris up asking where she was, to which he replied that she'd got up earlier that morning, but he didn't feel or hear her leave the hammock.
How can he know that she left?
Exactly. It literally makes no sense.
Yeah.
And like a hammock. I mean, I feel you getting out of bed or moving.
Yeah, yeah. A hammock. You can't get out of a hammock quietly.
No. Or without... And like, yeah,
without falling out or... Yeah.
He was very drunk the night before and he was probably really passed out. And I've been in states where, like, I've been that drunk where I've not realised what's going on. But in a hammock.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it seems a bit fishy.
It does seem a bit fishy. Hannah told police that she was concerned because all of Lauren's stuff was still left on the cliff, but explained that she thought she'd probably gone off with another group of boys or had gone to see Clint. When asked why she'd leave without taking her stuff, notably her flip-flops, Hannah shrugged, saying that she just thought she'd come back for them.
Okay.
Also, she says that she thought she might have gone to see Clint, but the canoe was at the cliff.
So she couldn't have gone across the marina.
She jumped and swam. Like, there's no way that she could get down from that cliff and back to the marina without taking the canoe with her and then coming back for the canoe to be put.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It just doesn't add up. Despite not knowing Lauren's whereabouts and, you know, from being reportedly worried, the friends embarked on another day of drinking, partying and partaking in water sports at Wakefest without Lauren. It's been reported that Chris even posted a photo on Instagram of himself, Aaron and Hannah, with the caption, "Wakefest went pretty good this year, met some new friends that made it awesome." Sherry claimed that the caption was actually edited and previously stated "best weekend ever," but it's not clear whether he posted the photo before or after Lauren's death.
Okay.
So I think that before the family were saying it was after Lauren's death. It was like the day after, like on the Monday.
And that'd be dead heavy if that was the case.
Dead heavy. But then I've seen other things saying that no, it wasn't. It was, you know, before.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I just thought I'd put that in there anyway.
Okay.
Although police concluded that Lauren's death was a tragic accident, Sherry was not satisfied. She believed that investigators had decided it was an accident before investigating any other possibilities, and she felt strongly that police didn't do anything in order to preserve possible evidence of a fall or otherwise. They didn't initially cordon off the campsite with crime scene tape and were allowing people, including the three friends, on and off the cliff to move and collect belongings and other items, thus contaminating the probable scene of an accident. They also failed to interview many of the witnesses from that weekend. Hannah, Aaron and Chris were informally questioned and they filled in some paperwork while at the police station, but swiftly left before being properly interviewed and were never tracked down afterwards for further questioning. Cassie, Samantha and even the fishermen who found Lauren's body were never interviewed either. Furthermore, Sherry was initially told by the investigator in charge, Jeremy Taylor, that Lauren had died as a result of cliff jumping gone wrong. However, there were never any police reports or written statements filed, including this information. And they later changed their minds based on a statement from Aaron Lilly in which he said Lauren allegedly hit her head on a rock while cliff jumping at some point that weekend. He claimed that she was out of it for a minute, possibly knocked unconscious, but soon came around and was fine. Police used this information to conclude that Lauren had concussion from her accident, which, along with consuming alcohol, made her disorientated and led to her falling to her death later that night.
So that would answer the hitting the head thing. You know, as part of the autopsy.
Yeah,
because if she'd done that the day before and hit her head, then the damage is going to be there.
But nobody ever reported seeing her with damage to her head before.
Okay, fair enough. So it's just so that singular account.
She'd been back and forth to the Fish Lips bar since that allegedly happened. Sherry says that her daughter would never ever cliff jump. My mum didn't know a lot of things that I got up to either. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I do think that
there's something more to it.
Yeah. So initially they're saying that she died from cliff jumping.
Yeah.
Which if that was the case,
it sounds like lapsed police work for a start.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
If that was the case, multiple people would have witnessed that, surely.
Yeah, 100%.
And things would have got done a lot quicker.
Yeah.
But then as soon as Aaron says, you know, oh, well, she was cliff jumping and she hit her head and she was unconscious for a little bit, but then she was fine. Police later, you know, took that and ran with it and said, oh, okay, so she was probably concussed, therefore
that's led to her falling and she's fell off,
And there were no actual, like, police reports of anyone cliff jumping. Nobody had said that, and Sherry even said, like, she doesn't know where that information came from.
Okay.
Before Chris had told police after.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. Yeah, yeah.
Before handing the case over to local police, Chris Yarchuk strongly advised that they should perform a rape kit on Lauren, because when he discovered her body, he remembered seeing a distinctive bite mark on her breast. However, investigating officers didn't take Yarchuk's advice, claiming that when Lauren died, she was wearing a tampon, which in their minds indicated that it was impossible that she could have been sexually assaulted.
Doesn't have to be in that way, though, does it?
Exactly.
It's the police work that's getting me. Yeah,
this is
horrendous.
And this is the thing, like, whether, you know, everything's pointing to an accident, the police work was still shit.
Yeah, it was terrible.
So what's a mum to think when they're being told, yeah, you know, this happened, we've not
so
got
blase
any evidence
about
of
it,
it
yeah,
but
yeah.
You're not gonna just sit back and take it.
No, of course
and
not.
I do think
any parent would want to fight for,
like,
that. Yeah.
On Reddit and things that are, like, on comment boards, like, I've seen that parents get quite a lot of shit because they're pushing this. When everybody's think, like, it's so obviously an accident, but, like, I'd probably do the same just because
the police work
of
was
the
so
way
shit.
That they've handled it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just find it disgusting that somebody can dismiss rape because she's wearing a tampon.
Could you not put it back in?
Exactly.
Do you know what I mean?
Exactly. To cover up the fact that, like,
yeah,
so that the police did think, okay, well, it can't be that because she's wearing a tampon.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It just seems so ridiculous. And as a woman, to think that, you know, something that takes 5 minutes to do wasn't done because of something like that, it's scary.
Yeah, yeah.
It's so scary.
No, definitely.
Sherry claimed that Lauren was found wearing clothes that, in her opinion, didn't belong to her daughter. Sherry didn't recognise the hot pink shorts that she was found wearing, and according to witnesses on Saturday night, Lauren was wearing white shorts. The white shorts, along with her sleeping bag and other items, have never been found.
So that, again, is also a red flag for me, because what's stopping a rapist from redressing her in different clothes?
Oh, Mums, you're ahead of it! You're ahead of it, because I was just about to say that a daughter's bra straps were twisted and the back of her bra was only hooked on the top clasp, leaving the other two clasps open. And this indicated to Sherry that Lauren didn't dress herself. So, on the bra thing.
But again, being drunk, that could also counteract that.
Yeah.
You're just going to put it on as quickly as you can.
That's annoying, right? So, twisted bra strap is annoying as fuck, and you want to sort that out as soon as you can.
Yeah.
I don't know any woman that can walk around with a twisted bra strap.
Right.
The back of the bra only being hooked on the top clasp. I've done that before.
Yeah.
If I'm somewhere where I don't have a mirror to see what I'm doing.
Okay.
You're just sort of trying to guess.
Yeah, yeah,
which, and then it might just hook on one, and then
you go,
like,
that'll do.
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah.
But to counteract that, she was doing a lot of water sports that day. So you think that she'd want to be secure.
True.
That her boobies aren't falling out.
But again, would you wear a bra to water sports? Wouldn't you wear
I think it was like a bikini bra. You know,
right.
Like a...
Yeah.
A bikini that...
Clipped like a bra.
Yeah.
Right, okay.
That's... speculation, I don't know that for sure.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
It's also speculated that Lauren was sexually assaulted, and as a result of strangulation during the act, her larynx was crushed.
Yeah.
They also believed that the huge bruises found on her thighs were caused by the perpetrator kneeling on her in order to pin her down during the attack, which makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it does.
Along with Lauren's family, police officer Chris Yarchuk also believed that there was evidence of foul play. When he found Lauren's body, it was floating, and according to him, drowning victims sink because their lungs fill with water.
Yep.
And although this isn't always the case, because dry drowning and other factors are possible, it's reported that Lauren's lungs were not completely filled with water, creating further doubt that she did not drown, despite her cause of death.
And it's just sort of gone in rather than breathing the water in. Yeah.
Yeah, despite her cause of death being ruled blunt force trauma and drowning. And I've just noted here on my notes that something that I've not seen discussed about this point is if a larynx was crushed, would she be struggling to breathe?
Yes, she would be, yeah.
So then she can't breathe in water.
Mm-hmm.
So then that's why only a little bit of water getting into her lungs.
So just to throw my thoughts at this point. All of the injury she has indicate a possibility of rape.
Mm-hmm.
The back of the head.
Yeah.
The back.
Yeah.
This attacker could have slammed her down, repeatedly slammed her down, making her unconscious, or punched her in the face to break her nose.
Mm-hmm.
Her
fingers are broken,
she's trying to escape. Yeah.
Or as he's holding her down.
Could be anything.
Down,
yeah, yeah. Could be, you know. And all these are, don't get me wrong, they're extreme injuries for that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's possible. If you're on a cliff, which is rocky, it's, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah, it's not on like a bed where it
that's
might
it.
Be
that's
softer.
It.
It's
yeah.
like you're in rough terrain.
That's it. So all these things are possible. You know, so that's just it. Again, me throwing out an initial thought.
No, I was just thinking that, like, you know, just to sort of dispute what Yarchuk was saying about, you know, how can she drown if her lungs hadn't filled up with water?
Yeah.
And I was just thinking that maybe, you know, her lungs couldn't fill up because she was struggling to breathe.
Well, it could be that.
But I've not seen that anybody also, say that. So I didn't know whether that was just silly of me to assume because obviously, again, I'm not a doctor and I don't know if that's possible. But
the other thing to take into consideration is if she was knocked unconscious before being put into the water, her breathing would be slower anyway.
So if she wasn't completely dead, because
yeah, if she it wasn't was struggling,
actually on the autopsy that, you know, the larynx thing didn't kill her.
Yeah, so it's... So if you're unconscious, your breathing slows anyway.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't be taking in water as much because you're not struggling to, you know, catch your breath.
Totally get it.
So that could be another reason.
Yarchuk also questioned the lividity on Lauren's chest.
Okay.
In his opinion, the bizarre triangle shape is more consistent with the shape and angle of the tip of the front of a canoe, especially the canoe that the friends were using to travel back and forth to the campsite, and not the hatch of the rescue boat.
So she could have been lent on a canoe.
So he believes that Aaron and Chris used the canoe to transport Lauren's dead body to the cove in order to hide and conceal her death. And in my opinion, I think that there are a lot of inconsistencies with this theory purely because, you know, if they were transporting a corpse, why would they place it on the narrowest portion of the canoe?
They'd have to have a sort of top half of her body in the boat.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And the bottom half of her body out of the boat. The moment that they push that canoe with force, she's going to slide underneath the
boat. That's exactly what I've got here. Yeah. But wouldn't it be more practical to place her body inside of the boat instead of half out?
Yeah, yeah.
The weight ratio of Lauren's body would cause the canoe to become unbalanced.
Yeah.
It would possibly buckle or tip over. And it would just be a mess. Like, just seems really inconvenient when you could literally just put a body
in the canoe and then
push
her out. Fully. Yeah, yeah.
And also, if Lauren's body was indeed placed on the tip of the canoe while the boys transported her in order to conceal a crime, why would they put her bloody head inside the boat, leaving her...
Potential DNA.
DNA, blood inside, just while her legs are dangling on the outside.
Yeah.
That was just, you know, the questions that I had about that. I just don't feel that, you know, that you would do things that way.
No. The only thing that I can think is that she's been lent on the front of the boat while they prepare the boat.
Ah. Okay.
So they could have put it on it. So the boat, because again, if a canoe's tied up, it will be at an angle. It won't be flat on the surface of sand and water because it'd be half in.
Would they risk doing that with people? I mean, it's 2 a.m.
2 a.m. So,
according to them, it's 2 a.m.
And again, if anyone walked past and she's just leaving,
well, they're
on the
not
boat,
going to be walking because.
But it'd be on like a beachy terrain or.
Well, if they're at the cliff,
that's
mean. Where it would be. So no one else would be walking on that cliff.
But again, because you'd have to walk down the cliff to get to the canoe.
Yeah, yeah.
So if anyone was around, they could say, oh, she's drunk.
But it was only them four that were staying
up on the cliff.
That night.
Okay, so fair enough then. Yeah, even more.
Yeah, it would be quite quiet.
So again, if it's half in the water, half on the land, they could have put her onto the boat to sort of put her there while they get everything together, which could have done the imprint.
I've not They've heard then... that been said before, and now that you say it, I was completely not on the canoe side of the thing at all.
Yeah,
I can't see that. But now that you've said it,
it makes a little bit more sense. Because then they could have then put her into the canoe and gone out.
Yeah, gone on the way.
So that's, again, just my, that's what I'm here for, my thoughts.
No, that's good because I've never heard that before and that does make a lot of sense. So, yeah, I'll have to rethink that one.
Yeah.
So people who believe Lauren's death was a result of foul play question the location of Lauren's body. She was found in a cove on the opposite side of the cliff to where they were staying. If the police's theory is correct and Lauren accidentally fell from a cliff while peeing, she would have had to have been on the side of the 45-foot drop because that's where the pee area was located.
Yeah, you wouldn't pee off a 90-foot drop, would you?
I wouldn't.
No. I think as a man you would because you're facing forwards.
Yeah. And also, if this girl's on a period...
Yes, true, of course.
You know, that's a lot of faffing around to do on a 90-foot drop.
Yeah.
So if she was at the side of the 45 drop where the pier area was, that means that a fall would have been broken by smaller ledges, trees and rocks, sort of like what we were talking about before.
Yeah, potentially even landing on one of the ledges.
That's the thing. So the Sheila Wysocki, the PI, actually demonstrated over 50 times this fall using dummies the same height and weight they were in, and they've never landed in the water.
Yeah, not once. That doesn't shock me at all.
And also they found no blood on the rocks or the cliff sides, and nothing was disturbed. So if a body's fallen, you know,
it would
branches
not
are going to snap, nothing like that was found.
Okay.
From the side with the 90-foot drop, so if she fell
straight
from that
down.
Side, a body wouldn't have ended up where it did, especially as the current was flowing in the opposite direction that night.
Okay.
In the lake. So a body would have gone
the opposite way.
So her mum believes that the only way a body could have ended up where it did in the cove was if it was placed there.
Okay.
Which is...
backs up my theory, what I said before.
Yep. And, you know, when we were saying about why would boys be near the body, and then you were
returning
saying...
returning to the scene of the crime. Yeah.
Or,
makes sense.
You know, maybe they just placed her there.
Yeah. Maybe. Yeah. But again, wouldn't the fishermen have seen them coming back to go for? Do you know what I mean? So going forward to go back or back to go forward?
Maybe, and the fishermen did say that they'd been, I don't know what the word is, for a boat that's parked.
Yeah, parked. Parked.
They were parked fishing there for a while and then...
They would have noticed.
They probably would have noticed, but still.
But at the same time, you don't always see what you're not looking for.
Well, exactly. I mean, they're just looking to catch some fish. They didn't think that they'd come across, you know, a dead body.
Yeah,
at that
but
point.
What time was she discovered?
Around 4 p.m.
4 p.m?
Mm-hmm.
No, the body would have been disposed by then, if that was the case. Because, again, if they're going out at 2 a.m.
Yeah, why else do you think they could have been there? Apart from just, like, go back to the scene of the crime.
Well, again, as I say...
Or just to check that she was still there. Or maybe even to check that no one had found her yet.
Well, again, like I said earlier, if you were a killer or you'd murdered someone and you'd buried a body in a particular location and you notice people gathering in that location, you're going to start worrying.
So now it makes sense, because we were saying at the beginning, like, you know, oh, it's not suspicious, but when you really think about it...
Yeah. It could well be, and again, it's... And I'm not saying that these guys did it, but, you know... that's what I'm here to do, is to obviously take the cases on face value, the information that you provide to me, and come up with my own theories and my own thoughts.
You're smashing it.
It's, you know, that is a possibility, you know, because again, it's like that famous case of, again, I saw it on Facebook or Twitter, of that guy saying he was being interviewed by the news.
Yeah.
And he got told, oh yeah, but they have found a body in this place, and it was actually him that killed person. Yeah. You see his face drop, and it's because he knows that people are in that location. He knows he's been caught.
And this is the thing as well that goes along with, you know, a lot of serial killers and psychopaths in general, is that they always try to
go back
and to put themselves in the investigation somehow. So
yeah, to help.
In their whole Madeleine McCann thing. So one of the suspects,
I can't remember
his name right now, but he was a British guy that was living...
in Portugal, I remember.
Not like literally like in the villa next to the apartments where she disappeared from. The next day, he volunteered to come in as a translator.
Yeah, I remember.
For the police and the family.
Yeah, I remember.
And, you know, nobody knows it's him. Like, it's not been proved that he did anything. But still... you know, in that sort of situation, that is, you know, people do try to put themselves there so that they can, you know, keep up to date
with what's
where
going on.
The police are in 100%. The investigation and stuff like that. So,
100%.
You know, makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it does. So I think we should maybe stop there and we'll come back to it in the next episode.
Yeah, it's gonna have to be a two-part.
I think it's definitely gonna have to be a two-part.
I didn't expect us to be chatting about it as much as
no
we did. I thought that you were gonna say she fell.
Yeah. Again, you know, I always try to overanalyze things and make sure that, you know, things as small as they can be can play a part
and
in these types of things.
Need to be investigator because you're so much better than me.
I just, as I say, there's, and again, it may well be that she just unfortunately fell, you know, but again, with all these different factors to play with, I'm going to theorise exactly what I think, and I'm sure that by the end of the second episode of this, I'll come to a full conclusion of what exactly happened. But thank you so much again for taking the time to listen. Yeah, I hope you enjoyed today's episode, and we'll hopefully have the next part of this up in a few days' time. And please give us a follow on Instagram and on Twitter, PITCUK. Thank you very much for your time. Bye.